We are Radio Catskill. From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Coming up, we've got more details on the effort to find new local employment for the hundreds of workers who will be losing their jobs when the PepsiCo plant closes in Liberty. We talk about the difficulty of tracking down stories of ICE raids in the Hudson Valley, especially when an immigration official may be conducting a ruse. Those stories from Philip Pantusa on the Times Union. Plus, Philip and I talk a little bit about what New York Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado is up to these days. He's had a big week. But first, we start by talking about some big bills. After many local residents received surprisingly, even confusingly, high electric bills from NYSEG, today they were able to meet face-to-face with NYSEG officials. Local folks went in with questions, and some came away feeling like they didn't quite get the answers they were looking for. Patricio Rabaya was there, and he got this story for us.
Nearly 100 people gathered at the Sullivan County Government Center in Monticello seeking answers from the New York State Electric and Gas, better known as NYSEG. Customers have been seeing their electric bills skyrocket, some doubling or even tripling, without a clear explanation. Facing growing frustrations, NYSEG representatives held a public workshop to address the concerns, but for many, the answers fell short. Assemblymember Paula Kay from the 100th Assembly District was one of the officials who helped organize this workshop for customers.
I am very happy to see so many people are coming out because this issue is so important to them, and you can see how important this issue is to a lot of the folks here. I never want to see someone choosing between paying rent, paying electricity, or buying food that they need. And because of the current billing situation, that's clearly an issue. So I'm very hopeful. NYSEG has a huge staff here that at least on some of the bills that are here will be able to come to answers, show some irregularities, and others where it's a hike because of the temperature differential between this year and last year, NYSEG has promised to help with no late fees, certainly not turning off anybody's electricity, and then we have resources that we can send people to help to pay their bills, because it's clear. Everybody's in this line, this huge line, because their bills are much higher than they were ever before.
According to NYSEG, the increase are due to a rising supply cost and a colder winter, but some customers aren't convinced. We spoke with several attendees to hear their stories. From Sullivan County, Rosemary, she said her bill is more higher than it was normally.
I definitely got a higher than normal bill. They're saying that it is the delivery charge, which is silly, but okay. And then the increased charges. It's actually getting to the point where my electric bill is now is almost as much as my mortgage. So, you know, we're going to have to make some cutbacks and figure out exactly what we're going to do.
Sean Williams from Hurleyville came to the workshop looking for answers for his high bills. Unfortunately, he felt he didn't get the help that he needed.
Basically, I have to do some stuff here and send in my bills. Just what I thought I had to do.
Right. How high was your bill?
Pretty high. Really? It was over double than what I usually pay.
Wow. So what answers did they give you? Like you have to be conserve more electricity? The rates went up.
Yep. That's all I can get is the rates went up.
Wow.
And the reason why? Don't know. Still don't know.
So what is your plan now?
Is to send my bills in, compare them, and hopefully they can do something and get these straight. I've lived in my house for 30 years, and I've never seen rates this high as in last couple of years.
Ephraim from Coshocton says he still doesn't understand why his house is using so much electricity while he's away, as he didn't get the answers he was looking for at this workshop.
I look my meter, and my meter jumped up from usually we use about 1,600 kilowatts a month. The past month went up a little bit over, but then now it jumped up to almost 3,000 kilowatts out of nowhere. So I came here to see if they can explain to me how come we burn so much when me and my wife work almost 7 days a week. We never home, but my electric bill went high, and he don't know why the meter read 3,000. I mean, the price is right for the 3,000. I just want to know where the 3,000 kilowatts came from.
Did you get your questions? No,
I'm still in limbo, the same thing. Mm-hmm. So nothing they got to do for me. They go to, they took a $547, and they don't go to do nothing for me. It's one of those things. I'm sorry. God bless you, and you're on your own. So I lost $300.
NYSEG President and CEO Patricia Nielsen was also in attendance and defended the company's pricing structure.
So our delivery prices have stayed the same per kilowatt price since our rate increase in May. The supply price, which we have to purchase on the open market, and for some rates has to be a price we can't even hedge. We don't make any profit on that price, but we have to pass it on. And unfortunately, the market prices have gone up, and customers are feeling that pain point with energy supply.
Okay. So what can folks do to sort of better their bill going forward?
Well, one of the things that will help customers is that smart meter, because we'll be able to give customers usage alerts so that before they get their bill, they can see if they're using more energy than normal. Because the other thing that happened is while supply prices went up, the temperature went down. Even if you keep your house at the same temperature, when it's colder outside, that furnace has to work harder if you're heating. So some of the things that customers can do is get the smart meters so that they can get those usage alerts, take advantage of the weatherization programs and services to batten down the hatches, think about how they're using energy. And if they are on a day-night rate, look to see that that rate is really beneficial for them. If you're on a straight rate, you're paying the same price per kilowatt hour. If you're on a day-night rate, you really have to be able to shift your energy use to that off-peak time.
So what are smart meters? These are meters that are attached with radio transmitters that could transmit actual detailed readings from your meter to NYSEG. And they're rolling these smart meters across service areas, providing accurate billing, real-time outage detection, and detailed energy usage insights through their own energy manager tool that NYSEG provides. Customers can opt out of the smart meter installation for $13.47 monthly fee, while businesses are required to participate. NYSEG says they expect full deployment by this year. But not everyone is on board with the smart meters. George Adams from Narrowsburg feels it's not the solution.
We got our bill last month and nobody's in the house, only using for heating, no appliances, and we were taken aback by the price, and we just wanted to see today what we can do to remediate that going forward when we're actually living in this new building.
And did you get your questions answered?
I did. I already knew the answers I was going to get to some of those questions. There were some helpful pointers that they gave us, reaching out to NYSERDA for one, and we'll do that after we establish a baseline, living there for a period of time. It's expensive, and nobody wants to use fossil fuels anymore. They don't want you to use oil for heating, and they keep on pushing the green wave. But you've got to have products at a reasonable price in order to have that going forward. This right now is not sustainable. As you can see here, people are hurting, and something's got to be done.
Do you feel satisfied with the answers they gave you?
To the most part, yes. Yeah, I don't think they're hiding anything. I think the reality is this is what it is right now. See how we can work with it.
Cliff Manning from White Lake says he got the answers he was looking for and plans to use NYSEG tips to better winterize his home next season.
Energy efficient windows, solar panel, solar lights on the exterior, and exterior doors, instead of just a screen door on the porch. So that was very, very helpful.
Okay. Do you feel satisfied with the answers they gave you?
Absolutely. I think he was very helpful. Nice and friendly, went over everything nice and neat with me. I felt very comfortable. and I'm glad I came. Got a very good explanation for how the bill is. He also recommended that my bill should probably be about 1,000 kilowatts. Right now I'm up to about 1,400 kilowatts per month. So whatever I need to do at home to make that go down, I'm going to do.
So what happens next? Assemblymember Paula Kay says after the workshop, she will contact the Public Service Commission and request they come to Sullivan County to help provide more answers about the high energy bills.
People got satisfaction, and I think some people didn't. And we're going to do a review, and it's quite likely that I'm going to, my next stop is the Public Service Commission, and bring them down and do a hearing. But we'll see. You know, I want to give NYSEG the opportunity to work with everybody and see what we can find out.
The Public Service Commission is a government agency that regulates utilities, including electricity, natural gas, water, and telecommunications, to ensure that the services, according to them, that are safe, reliable, and fairly priced for consumers. In New York State, the Public Service Commission oversees utility companies like NYSEG, Central Hudson, and Con Edison. The Service Commission also investigates consumer complaints, monitors utility billing practices, and works on policies to improve energy efficiency and sustainability. And according to the Public Service Commission, if consumers are experiencing usually high energy bills or other utility-related issues, the PSC can conduct reviews, hold the hearings, and even require utilities to take corrective actions.
They know how serious this is. On the other hand, if people aren't satisfied because they can't pay their bill because of the huge jump, and it happens to be because of the raise, then maybe the PSC needs to look at that again, because we can't have people, like I said to you before, choosing between paying their electricity or buying food. It's just not what we're here for.
For now, customers will have to wait to see if relief is coming. But for many, tonight, the lights will stay on at a cost they still don't understand. In Monticello, I'm Patricio Robayo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio. This is the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. And every Thursday, I talk to Philip Pantuso, Times Union, Hudson Valley, and tonight is no different. I talked to Philip earlier this afternoon about ICE raids in the Hudson Valley and New York Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado's big political week. And we start off with the latest on the PepsiCo plant closure. Here's Philip Pantuso.
So we spoke with some local officials and some employees who are slated to begin losing their jobs in May, kind of just tracking the fallout of this announcement, which was about a week ago now. And really the takeaway here, the main takeaway I say is that local officials, the Chamber of Commerce, and the Sullivan County Partnership for Economic Development have begun meeting with PepsiCo representatives to help individuals and families who are going to be laid off to find new local jobs through the Center for Workforce Development. Some of the services that they're providing apparently are job searching, resume preparation, and skill enhancement. It's something that PepsiCo said that they would do when they made this announcement in their sort of public response to it. But we also talked to some legislators there who are Sullivan County legislator Louis Alvarez specifically, who kind of raised a note of caution, saying that because many of the employees are primarily Spanish speaking, he said that he doubted they would have difficulties finding new jobs in industries like healthcare and hospitality, but said the challenge would really come from coordinating the effort to find so many people jobs at the same time. Just as a reminder, 287 people are slated to be laid off starting on May 15th. So, you know, it remains to be seen how well this effort will work, but certainly, you know, it seems like they're laying the groundwork to at least try to soften the blow a little bit.
And these jobs that they're trying to find, I'm wondering how close they are to our area, because one of the things that folks in Liberty are concerned about is just that this has a potential to very much negatively impact the town, especially the village, where a lot of these folks live, if they're going to get new jobs, the other question I have is, like, how close are they going to be able to stay, and will that be able to mitigate the loss that the town faces here?
I mean, yeah, that's a real unknown at this point. I'd be pretty surprised if all of them are able to stay. And certainly, you know, you have a facility of this size that closes, and you know, it's going to leave a huge impact. We spoke to Mark Baez, who is the president and CEO of the Sullivan County Partnership for Economic Development. And he said that, you know, any entity that loses a major employer like that, there's going to be a devastating effect. Even if you just look at the payroll individually, it may not be that significant, but together, 287 people who go to local shops and restaurants, grocery stores, there's this huge negative impact on the community. They did say that they are exploring, you know, a few options for somebody who might be able to move in, but no clarity yet on who that might be at this point.
It's great that we've got this reporting to let us know where things stand right now, but there's so much uncertainty in this, and there's real stakes for the whole wider community. So we're definitely going to continue following this. Next up, I know you've got a story about immigration action right in Kingston. What's happening there?
Yeah, so this is a big story locally this week. On Tuesday, the city of Kingston confirmed that ICE was in the city. And that alone is news for a couple of reasons. One, Kingston is what's called a sanctuary city. They passed a resolution in 2017 that bans local police from cooperating with federal immigration authorities or from inquiring about a person's immigration status during any kind of routine encounter with the police. So the fact that, you know, ICE can certainly come in to sanctuary cities, and in fact, they've kind of targeted sanctuary cities, but it's, you know, they're not going to get help from the local police. It was also unusual that the city actually confirmed this. So we've been doing a decent amount of reporting on federal immigration actions under the new Trump administration. And, you know, we were able to confirm one that happened in Caro up in Greene County a few weeks ago, but no actual authorities would confirm it. It was really just like we talked to the people who were impacted and the local business owners. It's been pretty unusual for cities and towns to confirm when these actions happen. So Maria Silva, who covers many things for us, from the PepsiCo closure to the immigrants and immigrant communities in Hudson Valley, she's been doing a lot of reporting on what we know and what we don't know about what happened in Kingston on Tuesday, because there's been a lot of misinformation that's been swirling and not much actual information has gotten out. But what she was able to find, speaking with witnesses and with people who, one of the persons who was being stopped by ICE, was that it seems like there were at least two targets. One is a man who was living in the country illegally. He was swept up, according to his landlord and another man who witnessed it, presumably is now entering deportation proceedings or is at least being detained currently. The other person who was sought is a green card holder, which means he's allowed to be in this country. He's a permanent resident. And Maria also discovered something fairly alarming, I thought, or we think at least, which is, they went to this man's house to try to find him, and he was not there because he was at work. This was according to his brother and his father. So they called him and left him a message, and the ICE agent who left the message said that he was with the police department. Now, we've confirmed with the Kingston Police Department that they did not participate in this action at all. And we've also confirmed, based on this person's name and the phone number they left, that he does work for the Department of Homeland Security. So this is what's called a ruse. Technically, federal immigration officers, they're allowed to say that they're police, or they're allowed to say that they're law enforcement. These ruse tactics are frequently used by immigration officers specifically who pretend to be with an entity other than ICE. Usually that's to gather information or to arrest somebody. It's a fairly common law practice by law enforcement agents more broadly, according to the director of Albany Law School's Immigration Law Clinic, who Maria spoke with for this story. What I found alarming about this instance is the ICE agent doesn't say he's the police. He says he's with the police department, which, you know, I don't know how that sounds to you. To me, that sounds like the local police, right? So, you know, it's something that is technically legal for them to do, but I think clearly intended to mislead, and something that immigrant advocacy organizations like the ACLU have challenged in court, alleging that it violates the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution.
That is complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, this action had, it sparked a lot of news locally. There was one or two stories done by other local papers, but no one was really able to get as much information as we've been able to get. And it sparked even more kind of rumors flying online. I think 2 weeks or so ago, I was on here talking about another story Maria had done, more of a feature looking at how immigrant communities are faring under the new Trump administration and the promise of increased deportations and rumors of ICE that are flying around. And one of the things that we reported in that story was that these advocacy organizations and the immigrants that Maria spoke with themselves, they say that sometimes all the rumors that are flying around on social media actually make it harder for the advocacy organizations to do their work and scarier for the immigrants, because it's not really clear like what's real and what's not.
Also, you know, we talk to people that are advocates for immigrant and migrant communities and civil service workers trying to provide services to these folks. One of the things they're always concerned about is whatever does or doesn't happen to any individual person, will the chilling effect of those actions prevent those folks from seeking resources that are available to them? That was just the sort of scenario that was playing out in my head when you were describing the use of a ruse, which may be common in certain areas of law enforcement. In this area, that seems to me to be an amplifier for that very chilling effect that so many people are concerned about.
Yeah, exactly. It's particularly in a city like Kingston, where the local police are not supposed to be cooperating with federal law enforcement. You know, the director of the Albany Immigration Law Clinic told us that can become even more problematic, because it's spreading misinformation in multiple directions. It can lead immigrants to not feel like they can go to local police. And here in Kingston and in Ulster County more broadly, the county sheriff and the Kingston police chief have been pretty vocal over the years, even going back to the first Trump administration, that, you know, the immigrants are people too, and they have some rights, you know, different, maybe not as many or different rights than people who are citizens of the United States, but that they, you know, they take it very seriously, making sure that their rights are protected as well.
On to our next story, Philip. Earlier this week, I'm reminding the listener that we got an update from our Albany correspondent with the New York Public News Network, Jun-Yun Hong, about the fact that Antonio Delgado won't be running for re-election as lieutenant governor, and that he and Kathy Hochul have been kind of exchanging words. There's a bit of tension there. You've got some info here on what Delgado might be doing in the future. What is he looking at?
Yeah, definitely no love lost between the two of them. some of the statements they released or their offices released about each other afterward were pretty spicy. But yeah, about a day after announcing he would not seek re-election as lieutenant governor, he filed a new campaign committee with the State Board of Elections. That filing is the latest indication that he plans to challenge Hochul for the Democratic Party nomination for next year's gubernatorial ticket. The committee that he filed or that he set up is currently labeled as undeclared, meaning its purpose has yet to be identified. But it's you can change it to an outright, you know, it's different than the committee he set up as lieutenant governor. And he already said he's not going to run for lieutenant governor again. So I feel like you can probably draw some conclusions about which office he's going to be seeking in 2026.
Have you heard any just reaction from other lawmakers about this? Is there any reporting indicating how people in Albany are feeling about this?
I haven't heard too much from current lawmakers. The former Hudson Valley Congressman John Faso, who lost his seat to Delgado in 2018, he spoke to Times Union columnist Chris Churchill for a story Chris was doing about Delgado's apparent imminent run for governor. And with the caveat that Faso is, you know, a rival of Delgado and it might be salty because he lost his seat, he said he, couldn't really see a pathway for him, winning the Democratic ticket for governor. He said that he rarely talks about policy. It's very hard to figure out what his positions are. He talks in platitudes. There are people who support Delgado who say that he is one of the rare Democrats who can kind of connect upstate and downstate issues. You know, he spent a lot of time in the Bronx. He's from Schenectady. He obviously represented the Hudson Valley. And for all of the sort of lack of specificity which he speaks in, which, you know, dates back to his time as a congressman, he is well known for sort of mixing it up with constituents. Like he goes to events, he shakes hands, he holds babies. And I think he has that kind of retail politics thing down, which you figure will help him at least raise his profile and maybe connect with voters who don't know much about him yet. But, it's early days in the jockeying for the, for the governor's race next year. There will probably be other Democrats who enter the fray, particularly given Hochul's vulnerability. She has not been a super popular governor, and she's now dealing with multiple crises, from the prison strikes to what to do about Eric Adams down in New York City. And so there probably will be others who want to take their shot. I just did think it was pretty interesting, at least, that Delgado jumped out at the time that would have about maximal impact to Kathy Hochul.
Yeah, really. Yeah, it has been an interesting week in that regard. And as both somebody that covers this and somebody who's ultimately going to have to vote for a governor here in New York State, I'm looking at this and I'm seeing that Governor Hochul is very unpopular, and I'm not seeing a lot of obvious candidates on the left. People really aren't sticking their heads up much yet. But again, they're going to have to soon if they want to have a big enough profile to actually get some traction here. But like you said, it's still early days. We've got time yet. We're talking about not this November, but next November. So there's a little time. Mm-hmm. Philip, I want to thank you so much for going over all this news with us, and I hope you have a good rest of your week.
Thanks. You too.
All those stories are up now at timesunion.com. It's timesunion.com. We've been talking to Philip Pantuso, and that's going to do it for the local edition tonight. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Stay with us for our phenomenal lineup of local music programs starting at 7 with Ramble Tambled. But we do have more news before any of that, because The Daily is up next. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Support comes from Tavern on Main, a neighborhood bar and grill on Main Street in Jeffersonville, featuring local American fare, Saturday and Sunday brunch, and Thursday trivia nights. Menu and hours online at tavernonmainny.com.
Virtual Soundscapes transports you to the sonic realms of video game magic, where pixels meet melodies and controllers become conductors. Virtual Soundscapes, Thursday night.